Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see. Nothing to see. Nothing to see.
Experimental radio produced by NASCAD University.
You are listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio produced at NASCAD University. This episode is called Not Much to Look At, a Guide to Invisibility.
Invisible man, by some strange coincidence, marries an invisible woman. Their children were nothing to look at.
How to be invisible. On a Wednesday morning before sunrise, one must bury the severed head of a man who's committed suicide, along with 7 black beans. Water the beans for 7 days with good brandy, after which a spirit will appear and tend to the beans and the buried head. The next day, the beans will sprout, and you must persuade a small girl to pick and shell them. One of these beans, placed in the mouth, will make you invisible.
So when I first learned I could turn invisible at will, I was about 11 years old. I was in the candy store, and the store person working kept looking at me, and I wanted some treats. I was looking for some candies. There's these really sour candies called Warheads, and I just wanted to eat one of the Warheads, and I didn't have enough change, or I didn't know if I had enough change, so I basically, I realized I could just really flex my muscles and I would turn completely invisible. At that time, I knew that it was wrong to take the candies from the store, but I wasn't sure if taking the candies would matter because there were so many of them there. And so I grabbed them and I was in the back of the store, and in the back of the store, I flexed so that I was visible again, and I started eating these sour Warhead candies. And it was that time I wasn't really sure if the person working at the convenience store was could see me or not. I wasn't sure if I was actually invisible or if it was more they were looking the other way.
Take a black cat and a new pot, a mirror, a lighter, coal and tinder. Gather water from a fountain at the stripe of midnight. Then you light your fire and you put the cat in the pot. Hold the cover with your left hand without moving or looking behind you, no matter what noises you may hear. After having made it boil 24 hours, put the boiled cat on a new dish. Take the meat and throw it over your left shoulder, saying these words: Asib, Quod, Tibi, Du, Et Nihila, Amepulus. Then put the bones one by one under the teeth on the left side while looking at yourself in the mirror. And if they do not work, throw them away, repeating the same words each time until you find the right bone, and as soon as you cannot see yourself anymore in the mirror, withdraw, moving backwards, while saying, Pater, in manus, tas, commandendo, spiritum, meum. This bone you must keep.
I was 11 years old, so I was in grade 7, and I realized I needed to find out if I was actually turning fully invisible. So I would be walking to school, and there would be all these other kids walking to school, and if I flexed all my muscles, then I found that I would turn completely invisible, and I could basically run around the road, run around the grass, people's lawns, usually making a lot of noise. I liked the way kids looked around, trying to find out where I was. One time, a friend of mine, I snuck up on a friend of mine, and I was invisible all the time. I usually am invisible when I'm walking to school. And I pushed him down, and it was really snowy, so he didn't get hurt, but he fell right into the snow. It was hard not to laugh. He must have thought that he slipped. I don't know. I ran to school, turned visible, and just kept laughing every time I looked over at him.
How to be invisible. On Midsummer Night at midnight, when all the planets are above the earth, kill a serpent and skin him and dry him in the shade. Bring it to a powder, hold it in your hand, and you will be invisible.
As I got older, I realized that I could cheat on tests. I realized I could steal cars. I drove my first car when I was about, I'd say, 12 years old. I was invisible at the time. I stole the car, and I ended up driving it into a small forest. The trees were really small. The car was ruined. But I was okay, and I left the scene invisible.
Why, these trees are weird and small. Whew, I better get back to town. Well, I guess I'll just walk down the path that I created. Hello, bunny.
Hello.
Oh, there's more of you.
You step
there's
on
a bunch
us.
Of us down here.
You can talk?
Yeah, we can.
This is a magical forest with magical bunnies. Do you see me?
Yep. This is our magical, wonderful forest. Welcome.
Oh, thanks.
You crashed your car into our home. You kind of did some damage, and we want to help you get home, but only if you can heed our message first.
Okay.
All you need to do, Mark, is just start doing good with your powers of invisibility. Just start making better choices, you know, like help people instead of hurting people. And you know, we've seen a lot of good kids like you come through this forest, and they're on a very bad track. And, you know, one of them is in jail for fraud right now, and another one is in some jail in Mexico, and it's just not a good scene if you continue down your current path, Mark.
I'll do whatever you say, magical bunnies.
If you turn your life around, good things will come.
But if you use your powers for bad, I see nothing but dark shadows and living in your parents' basement for the rest of eternity.
No one wants to live in their basement.
I promise, from this day forward, I will follow whatever you say, magical bunnies.
We only ask for one thing in return.
I'd really like to snort some coke and freak out a little bit. You know, it's
drugs?
You know, if you could find us some acid, like...
How to be invisible. Take a rabbit on the 24th night of the month. Behead it facing the moon. Call upon the angelic spirit, Salamiguil, and then mix the blood of the rabbit with its bile. Bury the body well. If it is exposed to sunlight, the spirit of the moon will kill you. To make yourself invisible, anoint your face with this blood and bile at nighttime, and you will make yourself totally hidden from the sight of others. And in this way, you will be able to achieve whatever you desire.
My teenage years after that, once I realized sort of what I could get away with the ability of turning invisible, and I think I want to say I grew a lot from that. From that misbehavior, from doing those bad things, I think that I learned a lot about myself and other people, and I think I've put it all behind me. I mean, now when I turn invisible, it's mostly to avoid door-to-door salesmen. When I'm homeless people, sometimes they make me uncomfortable, so I turn utterly invisible and walk past them. And I'm much more comfortable this way. I have to make sure that cars can see me, so I must turn invisible again. Of course, as an adult, I realized that if anyone were to discover my ability to turn invisible, then I would probably be locked up and tested. So I'm usually hiding in a small overhang or a bathroom is a good one. You go into a bathroom, leave the door open as if no one's in there, turn back visible or invisible, and then walk back out. It's a surefire way of transitioning from visible to invisible. I want to do some good. I'm trying to find out some ways to do some good with my power of turning invisible. So far, it's been difficult to find quite the right way of doing it. I've thought about trying to get a police scanner and go to scenes of crimes and help out the police when they're fighting the criminals. But so far, I haven't been able to get a good police scanner. I haven't been trying to find one online. Can't really find a really good one. Reading a bunch of reviews, not really sure where that's going to happen. I did gain a lot of money in my earlier years, and a lot of I had to learn how to do a bit of creative accounting with it in order to safeguard my holdings and to be able to sort of grow my nest egg, as I like to think of it. And now I live quite comfortably. I've got a decent, I like my house. I like my life. And I don't know. I don't think that anyone really suffered. I don't think I've done really anything wrong. I've got a beautiful wife. Feel like sometimes her friends might be making fun of her behind her back, or just being her friends in order to seduce her or something. I spent a lot of time following people. I kind of feel like a spy or a private investigator, which is funny because I'm an accountant. I've traveled for free, and that's a blast. Of course, nowadays you got a lot more detecting mechanisms, and you got to be real careful as you're going through the airports, making sure that you don't get accidentally scanned. Can't carry much luggage. You just got to go with a shirt in your back, and you can go any place in the world, any place in the world. I find if I don't speak the language of the place, I don't really go invisible at all. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about what I'm in another culture, I'm immersed in that other culture, and no one speaks, I don't speak the language, I want to learn it, so I want to be visible, I want to be interacting with people, and I like it. One time someone ran over and grabbed my camera, just ran away, bolted away, and by the time I caught up to him, he had already given the camera to someone else. I found it a little bit funny, thinking about how I probably stole something, paid for that camera with, some shady dealings or whatever. So it's a little bit karma or something like that.
I am an invisible man. I am a man of substance, of flesh and bone, fiber and liquids, and I might even be said to possess a mind. I am invisible simply because people refuse to see me.
The gifts of lovers to one another are, in respect to love, nothing but forms. Yet, they testify to invisible love.
I love you.
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 Yes, I did recently break up with my wife. We're going through a messy divorce. The love was real at one point. I think she wanted me to be something I never could be. I think with my wife, when she joined our community, she just could never quite get used to the looks of the stairs and our lifestyle, and you know, that's okay. I wish her well. She became invisible after we were married. She converted. Because of this, you know, the children actually are slightly opaque, frosted. It depends on really, the time of day, the angle of the sun, strength of the light. They wear layers and they go out with their, you know, in our community, they go out with their solid friends.
The gifts of lovers to one another are, in respect to love, nothing but forms. Yet they testify to invisible love.
Yes, you know, there was a time where, you know, there would be no crossing over between of the solids and the diffusers. There's been some marriages. They haven't all worked out. It's quite a cultural shock for both parties. But when the love is there, you know, the love is now allowed to flourish.
Sometimes the heart sees what is invisible to the eye.
Her parents never really approved. You know, if I can't see him, you won't either. You know, the usual things. You grow up being told, hey, put on some sunglasses, Or, hey, you know, just walk through that puddle before you come over here. I want to see how close, you know, it's so it gets, you know, you get used to it. She has reappeared, as you said. That is the preferred term. You know, the term, the correct term, the politically correct term, we'd say. We would reappear. But we would like to note that invisible people have not disappeared ever.
The more often we see the things around us, even the beautiful and wonderful things, the more they become invisible to us. That is why we often take for granted the beauty of this world, the flowers, the trees, the birds, the clouds, even those we love, because we see things so often, we see them less and less.
We are here, you know, we are as solid as anyone else. We are still, you know, we are physical matter and we are collected. I have a voice. Really, the difference between an invisible person and a visible person is actually in the perceiver's eyes. It's just that your visions cannot quite register the particular frequencies.
I am an invisible man. I am a man of substance, of flesh and bone, fiber and liquids. And I might even be said to possess a mind. I am invisible. Simply because people refuse to see me.
Not visible, invisible. You know, these are all terms, all labels that have been applied to us. Our community would prefer to be called the hidden ones, you know, the quiet ones, so to speak. Voyeurism, you know, there's all sorts of things that come with being of an invisible or hidden background. You know, we can't actually see ourselves either. Our eyes are not actually quite capable of registering the frequencies we're on either. So there's a lot of feeling around, a lot of fumbling. And because of that, hidden people tend to be very touchy. You know, but we have to be open with one another. It's okay. And, you know, a lot of you conspicuous types, you're not about that. You know, you're like, here I am. You don't need to touch. We have the two kids are now 14 and 11. They're doing well. They're now, you know, they're realizing to be invisible, you know, it's hard to be known, especially when you're trying to come up with your own identity. But some of the benefits are that you know, you don't have to worry too much about fashion. You know, like I said, with the kids, they're opaque right now. I hope that they'll you know, come to appreciate their culture more, come to see how lucky they are to have to come from the people that they come from. Whether or not they do that or they cover up, that remains to be seen. I will love my children no matter what.
First thing I would do if I was invisible, I would stop playing in traffic, because I think being invisible and being in traffic would be a fairly difficult thing to survive. But if I was invisible, the most difficult thing, or the, it'd be nice to be able to walk into a bank and sort of fill your pockets, but still, that would show up on the video cameras. I don't know. Being invisible sucks. Well, I've never been invisible. You always like that when you're sitting there in cubicle land and working away, and you'll hear your boss go off about what an idiot you are, and they don't really know that you're there, and comment on your work ethic or whatever. And being invisible in a situation like that is not good. And that's, yeah, it's happened to me in a way. Invisible people do exist, and actually, it's kind of sad that just recently on the 17th of May was the International Day Against Homophobia, Transgender Phobia, Biphobia, and these are all people that live in our society, and they're treated as being invisible because they don't fit into a particular niche, and that's kind of sad. There's when you walk down the street, there's the people that are homeless, and they're invisible to most people too. So there's nothing new about being invisible in our society. The only people that are visible are the guys with all the cash.
The invisible hand is a phrase that was introduced by Adam Smith in his great book, The Wealth of Nations, in which he talked about the way in which individuals who intended only to pursue their own interests were led by an invisible hand to promote the public welfare, which was no part of their intention. He was talking about the economic market, about the market in which people buy and sell. And he was pointing out that in order for a butcher or a baker or a candlestick maker to make an income, he had to produce something that somebody wanted to buy. And therefore, in the process of promoting his own interests or looking to his own profit, he ended up serving the interests of his customers.
Adam Smith was one of the principals of an astonishing period of human learning called the Scottish Enlightenment during the 18th century. He's the author of two books. In 1759, The Theory of Moral Sentiments was his first book. 1776, the one he's more famous for now, An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations. Those two books together almost single-handedly began the discipline of political economy. Adam Smith called himself a moral philosopher. For him, moral philosophy encompassed all of the investigation that had to do with human behavior. So he's now principally known as the father of economics, and that's because of the book, The Wealth of Nations. If you've heard anything about The Wealth of Nations, the one phrase you may have heard of is invisible hand. So about halfway through the book, it's 1,000 pages long, chock full of information. About halfway through the book, he uses this phrase, invisible hand. And that phrase is very important because what Smith thought he had discovered was that commercial societies, markets could enable human beings who are seeking to satisfy their own self-interest to actually benefit other people, even if unintentionally. That's really an amazing insight and one of the key pieces of our understanding today of markets and commercial society. But what might be even more interesting, at least to me, about that Wealth of Nations is at the beginning of it. Remember that the title of the book was An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations. So what Smith was interested to know was, why are some places wealthy and other places are not? Well, what Smith didn't say is almost as important as what he did say. It's not because of natural resources. It's not because some races are superior to others. Both of those were explanations that were available and heard at the time. That wasn't it for him. What he thought the key to the difference between wealthy and non-wealthy places was whether they allowed division of labor. Could a person focus on something? Why would that matter? Because if you were allowed to focus on a fairly narrow range of activities, this could unleash your human ingenuity. For Smith, this was really the key to explaining why some places were wealthy and other places were not. It was not those other factors. It was whether the society, whether the community, whether the nation allowed people's individual ingenuity, scope, to investigate, entrepreneurially figure out new ways to do things to satisfy our interests better. Those societies that allowed individuals scope for their ingenuity, they succeeded, they flourished. That was really the key to human prosperity.
Now, Adam Smith is typically viewed today as a conservative economics guy, and he's viewed as a supporter of free markets and what they call the invisible hand of the marketplace, which is the idea that if you leave the market alone with no government regulation, then it'll take care of itself and everything will work fantastically. Now, that's the perception of Adam Smith that most people have today. Let's listen to Chomsky break it down, though, and explain a whole bunch of misconceptions about Smith.
Adam Smith is very rarely read. He's worshipped, but not read. So, for example, everyone's heard of the phrase invisible hand, but almost no one knows how he used it. The term invisible hand actually does appear in his classic Wealth of Nations once. It appears in an argument against what's now called neoliberalism, what's now called neoclassical economics that we're supposed to worship. So we're supposed to worship Adam Smith and neoclassical economics, and they radically differ on the notion invisible hand. Adam Smith was concerned, as David Ricardo later was, that if there was free movement of capital and free import of goods, he was concerned about England. He said England will suffer because British capitalists will invest abroad and they'll import from abroad, and that'll harm the English economy. Ricardo had similar concerns. And Adam Smith then gave an argument. It was not a very good argument, but his argument was that English investors will prefer to invest in England because of what something called a home bias. They'll have a preference for investing close by, and therefore, as if by an invisible hand, England will be saved from the menace of free capital movement and of free imports. That's invisible hand. What's that got to do with the Cato Institute or the modern enthusiasm about free capital flow and having U.S. corporations invest in China so they can send stuff back here to sell cheap, exploiting Chinese workers? That's not Adam Smith.
You can play all summer. It's actually really good.
This is the only place I found this. Lovely.
Guys, there's another EV.
Where?
Here.
It's like my ninth raspberry.
Come here to the ninth floor, real quick.
I've passed someone crying her head off. She was so sad. People are sad here in this hospital. I often come to the hospital, as is tradition. And sometimes people cry, because their 16-year-old son just died. They cry because when someone 16 years old who you love and count on to keep existing and maintaining their parts of you that they hold on to disappears, you're left with some sort of hole. The parts like jokes that you guys have made or shared memories and stuff, that I don't know, just it hurts. I'm at the hospital very often. I have a system that deals with the toilet. The toilet at hospitals can be a place of nightmare and fear. I only trust certain toilets at the hospital. I think other ones, like the ones in the emergency ward or potentially some of the ones near the front entrance, are somehow dirtier and weirder than others. I like the ones that are outside of the OR or other places that are less accessed. I don't know, I've had too many bad experiences where I've gone into a bathroom and it's been covered in puke or blood. That's why I don't trust certain toilets at the hospital. I have forcibly made arrangements with my contacts here at the hospital so my priests and priestesses can be here whenever their schedule allows it. I need witches to be near me at all times. The nurses walk around and check on stuff. They sit behind desks and in rooms and sleep or watch Netflix. Sometimes I hear people breathing at like 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. They're breathing and it sounds as if they're sleeping in the rooms. Sometimes it's only a thin curtain that hides their vulnerable sleeping bodies. I bet they're all warm in their blankets, even the really sick ones. Sometimes I want to break things. Here, while walking around the hospital hallways all day and all night, there are a lot of objects around, lots of objects that seem custom-made for the hospital. I don't like smelling people's like pee, or sometimes you can smell their like, I don't know, they're not urinals, but these things that people poop into when they're in their beds, and I don't like to walk through the hallways and smell that. And I don't like to be to smell their blood or vomit. Particularly, I don't like to smell their dead bodies at hospitals. They're not something I like doing.
You have been listening to Not Much to Look At, A Guide to Invisibility, an episode of Nothing to See Here, experimental radio produced at NASCAD University. The performers in this episode were Mark Hines, Raphael McDonald, Maeve Mulroy, Alexander Robier, and David Clark. Excerpts were from Milton Friedman, James Otterson, Kyle Kolinsky, and Noam Chomsky. Sound design was by David Clark. Editing was by David Clark. Texts were by David Clark and Mark Hines. For more episodes, please search for Nothing to See Here Radio on SoundCloud.com. Please friend us on Facebook at Nothing to See Here Radio. Please tune in next week for more of Nothing to See Here. I wanna be invisible and look around the world for good. Sleep and see us. I'll creep into your gated hood. Whisper, whisper in your dreams and tear out your wrongs.
Thank you.